you can have. Think of the worst job you've ever had. Think of the worst job you can have. Think of the worst job you've ever had. That is a joy compared to running a political party in Colorado. Meet the man who took it on for the Colorado Republican, Steve House. Glad to have you here.
Thanks, Sean. Good to
Honestly,
be here.
I think this has got to be the worst job in politics. I know you love it, but the party chair, and I imagine it's the same thing on the Democrat side. You know, if you lose, it's all your fault. If somebody doesn't win the primary, it's your fault. If there wasn't too much money, it's your fault. And if you ran the wrong guy in the primary who then got beaten in the general because you didn't vet him properly, which is not your job at all, it's your fault. So I just want to say in advance, it's your fault.
Yeah.
Why would you want this job?
After that statement, I'm thinking about writing my resignation right now.
But you know what I mean. It's one of those necessary jobs, but if you do it right, pretty much everybody is hacked off.
It's true. I think the one thing that I look at it as, maybe differently than other chairs have looked at it, is I look at the state party as a business, and it's a business that's servicing a need in the communities, and that business is trying to help create an infrastructure for candidates to be able to display what they believe in to the people who are going to vote for them. My job is to create that infrastructure so that they can do that. And then follow a set of rules, make sure the voting is done in an honest, transparent, fair, and open way in a primary, and then we support a general election candidate. The great thing about it is I get to also message the Republican brand, which I think is going to be a wonderful part of this as part of the job.
Well, let me ask you about the first part, and then I want to ask you about the
sure.
second. So the idea of we run the races. And when you think about it, we don't have open primaries. So Republicans vote for Republicans, Democrats vote for Democrats, which is why when I see somebody who isn't affiliated, they're wasting their vote because they can only vote in the general. And there's always this pressure of does the party get involved in a primary, push one guy forward and try to hold somebody back, or do you play the umpire and just keep it fair and then push whoever wins? And it's easy to say we're gonna be fair, but sometimes it doesn't work well. I think of the Dan Mays experience.
Oh, yeah.
It can blow up on you. And then everybody says, why didn't you vet that guy?
I think that has been a significant problem with the party, but I also think that if you really set the party up right and you stay focused on the things you need to focus on, which is who are the voters, what do they care about, where are they, who votes, who doesn't vote, and then you make that playing field sort of a fertile ground for candidates to step into, the best candidates will rise to the top. Today, we make candidates do it all on their own. I mean, there's some data process that goes on within the state party that's helpful, and within the RNC it's helpful. It's just not anywhere near what it needs to be competitive with the Democrats. And I think once we do that, great candidates will rise up in every primary situation on their own, and we won't need to mess around with it.
Is there, there's been talk about changing the primary system, that is to perhaps have open primaries, to do something, the thinking being that primaries, you usually get more hardcore conservatives, sometimes hardcore social conservatives, and people who aren't going to be able to win in the general. Now, the same thing happens on the other side. The thought being was, well, how do you change that so you get this is the terrible word, but someone more palatable in the general. Do you think we ought to move towards an open primary system, or do you like what we have?
I actually like the caucus process fairly well. I think we need to execute it better. We need to get more people involved in it like they do in states like Iowa and New Hampshire and other areas. I think the question mark that the legislature is going to have to deal with here shortly is, should we have a presidential primary? Because the bigger issue with the presidential primary is we've got almost 1.1 million unaffiliated voters. If you had a presidential primary and you retained the caucus system, those unaffiliated voters would likely have to choose sides in that scenario. So open primary, no. I think you need to be affiliated with a party so that you can choose the party's nominee based on your basic principles and beliefs, you know, as a voter. But the idea of potentially having a presidential primary is something we're going to be debating here very quickly.
Talk about the other side. Mm-hmm. Advertising for Republicans. Now, you know, talk about trying to market new Coca-Cola. You know, this has always been a problem for Republicans. And I'll take one shot at it because it is a big tent. Mm-hmm. And so you have pro-choice, you have pro-life, you have social conservatives, you have libertarian-leaning conservatives, and they're all over. And it's really easy to kind of pull some of the outliers and try to paint the entire party that way. What do you think the party needs to do to change that image, and what are you going to be able to do?
I think that the Republican Party has to create a preference for the brand in general, rather than rely strictly on letting candidates get into races and define it. I think people do not understand what it means to be a conservative, and I think in reality, they don't know how being a conservative connects to them individually. So for kids that are 20 years old or 25 years old, if you ask them what Republicans are, they will give you some derogatory terms like old white men, right? The reality of it is Republicans are conservative enough to help them realize their dreams. They just don't know that. So I think we've got to create a brand out of this party that is preferable by voters in this state. And then when candidates step into races, they'll already have the brand backing them up. And right now we haven't done that.
The left does a great job of describing the Republican brand. I mean, they're right. The ones who paint the brand.
Right.
The brand is homophobic. The brand is war on women. The brand is rich white guys. You know, and I think about it, I think, no, this is a less government brand, which is more power to you, run your own life. We're here to make sure that you have to do it. How do you make that change? Because if polling is right, the growing level is unaffiliated. People on both sides are saying, forget this, pox on both your houses. We're going to become unaffiliated.
I think a lot of the unaffiliated are unaffiliated because they don't want to deal with social issues. They want to talk about fiscal issues and how America is being run, and they're tired of both parties and their stances. I think what we really have to do is define it at another level, because if you've been around politics for a long time and you've been paying attention to people like John Caldera and the Fox News Network and other people, you get what limited government means. If you're 30 years old and a late stage Gen Xer, and you look at it and go, I don't really understand what limited government means, so the Democrats are for taking care of everybody, and the Republicans are for something I don't understand. So if I don't understand Republicans and I listen to the Democrats and they're the ones doing the definition, I can't win as a Republican. That has to change right away.
Let's talk about the mechanisms, the actual infrastructure. Mm-hmm. That there's a lot that has to go on here.
Correct.
You got to run these elections, and then you have to go and get out the vote. So you got to take care of Republicans mm-hmm. during a primary, and then you've got to reach out to unaffiliated after that. What needs to change in the party from your point of view?
Well, clearly, today, if you look at the demographics, there are five voting generations alive today. The builders are silent generation, the baby boomers, which is where I'm at, the Gen X generation, the millennials, and the Gen Z. And a lot of people group the Gen X all the way to the Gen Z into one digital generation.
Listen, anybody under 45, they're all one group to me.
One big
and
group.
I hate them all.
Right. They're all young and
they're all young
rising
and
to power.
Yeah.
And I think if you go back to 1959 and 60, when in the rise of John F. Kennedy against Nixon, Nixon was a very qualified candidate to be president back then, and Kennedy was less so. But that generation was growing up into power. And I think if you don't communicate differently to those five generations, you're not going to make progress. We tend to communicate fairly well to the builders and the baby boomers, but nobody else. The Republican Party's got to create the mechanism to communicate with them first.
Would a good analogy be more like how marketing is being done now? That used to be mass market. You put your ad on the Super Bowl, hope everybody sees it. Now it's Pandora. I'm going to go to you. I'm going to use a Facebook page to go to you.
Exactly.
Do you think Republicans have the savvy to be able to do that? Because it's a different game than we've ever played.
We have to have the savvy. I think we can hire the savvy. We're already looking at it at the Colorado level, because the reality of it is a 25-year-old is not going to open direct mail. They're probably not going to open email. They certainly aren't going to watch TV ads. So we've got to get to them at the place where technology meets them directly. And we haven't done that, but that's a big part of the plan.
That story I heard was during the election, now that we have all mail-in ballots, I've heard from three different people that their kids called them up, voting age kids, and said, Dad, where do I get a stamp?
Yeah, exactly.
We don't understand this generation. We really don't. What are the steps to get there?
First, you got to have the technology to understand who they are. if you don't know the difference between a person by name and by address on whether they're a 25-year-old voter or an 85-year-old voter, you're going to make mistakes. And I think we've done that for a long time. We've got multiple groups. The other thing that happens in the state is 527s play a significant role, and they've established connections to people that we don't know about. And so they're communicating messages and making voters react to things. And as a state party, we don't have enough information to understand that. So we first have to understand who the voter is and what they want, what their preferences are. And then we got to communicate with them at a level that meets their technological standing and what they want to do. We just have to go and do the hard work that makes that happen.
I just have this vision of a bunch of Republicans who are going home tonight and their VCR is still blinking 12 o'clock, and the people we need to get hold of don't know what a VCR is.
Exactly right.
All right. Talk about messaging. Getting to particularly unaffiliated women, that swing demographic is so crucial. These are a lot of single moms. I mean, this is the tough demographic. Cory Gardner was able to connect with them, I think, wonderfully, partly because his opponent was nothing but all about the uterus, and
right.
That just got so ridiculous. And Cory was a likable guy. How does the Republican message ever get sold to that demographic?
It starts out with attitude. If we look at the studies that were done post the 2014 election, Bob Beaupre lost the governor's race by losing 18 points to John Hickenlooper on the women you're describing. Cory Gardner lost that by 1 point.
The same swing demographic women. Unaffiliated women.
Exactly.
So Bob Beaupre lost by 18,
Cory lost by one.
Wow.
And the answer when we asked those women, what was it that made you vote for a Cory Gardner and a John Hickenlooper instead of Bob Beaupre? And the answer was simple. It was that they felt like John and Cory were very positive people, that they were talking about an optimistic message, that they weren't simply talking about how the sky is falling with the debt, how we've got trouble on the horizon. They were talking about how solutions would happen, and they had a positive, enthusiastic view of America. And I think people would prefer that optimism to the negative that we see on a regular basis.
All right, let me ask you, we've got about a minute. Let me ask you about where we find those Republicans. Mm-hmm. I mean, I joke that we don't have a bench, we have a folding chair. It's hard to find Republicans who are willing to run. It's a tough job, you're putting yourself out. Mm-hmm. Where do we find those next Cory Gardners? Do they exist?
Oh, I think they definitely exist. I think if you look out between now and 2018, we've got some up-and-coming leaders that are going to be outstanding. I think our bench will be great. Will we have them all that we want in 16? I don't know if we know that yet, but I certainly think the Gen Xers that were born in the late 60s, early 70s, there's a lot of them on the rise. There's some great people in statewide offices today. There's some great people rising up through our legislature and through our county commissioner ranks that are really going to be outstanding leaders and compete and win, I believe, in the Republican Party here over the next 4 to 6 years.
Real test will be, can we hold the state Senate? Can we win the state House? And what about that U.S. Senate seat?
Well, the U.S. Senate seat's going to be a tough seat because Michael Bennett's not an unpopular guy. The real test is, how do we get to 2020 in power?
People want to get hold of you. It's Colorado GOP, Colo GOP.
That's exactly right.
Colo GOP. Steve, thank you. Good luck.
Thank you, John.
It's going to be fun. Listen for me on the radio. Tell a friend. We'll see you next week.